from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
There's strike three called, and a new career high officially for Christian Javier. 14 strikeouts and 12 straight innings with at least two. He is absolutely shoving.
Yordan drives one deep right field. An explosion off his bat sets off the 4th of July celebration. Astros' biggest comfort behind victory of the season. They win it 7-6.
You want to go way up. Called third strike, top of the zone. Trout has struck out 3 times on 9 pitches. Urquidy has been immaculate. Pena hits one to center field. Back goes Trout. Still going back. He's at the wall. Ball game over! 2 walk-off home runs to center field in Pena's rookie season. The Astros win it 4-2 with Jeremy Pena hitting 2 home runs. Walking it off on a Sunday against the Angels for the sweep. And he goes down for a 3rd time. That is 13 strikeouts for Framber Valdez, continuing to increase his career high.
Blank, Branham, Brendan behind the glass. Tuesday edition of the Killer Bees. It's the 5th of July. What a time to be an Astro fan.
Yeah.
7 wins in a row for the Astros. And heroics along the way. You get a Yordan walk-off yesterday, a Pena walk-off the day before that. You have Christian Javier striking out career highs. You have
20 in a game.
20 in a game for the Astros. Framber struck out 12 recorded outs in a row, which shattered the Astros club record that was previously 9. I mean, the Astros are doing just about everything you can do on a baseball field as they've won 7 in a row. Good time. Golden age for the Houston Astros.
Well, beautiful thing. And I think that from all we talked about, and you play the schedule that's presented to you at the start of the year, but you were playing a lot of teams for a good stretch there. In May, where they were either 500 or below and nothing to write home about. So we knew that there was going to be a period in time where the schedule would catch up to you, and we knew this gauntlet of games against the Yankees and the Mets would start it off. Little did we know that it would be a signal to the rest of Major League Baseball that not only are the Astros good, they may be the best team in baseball, and they're playing like it, and they continue to play like it, and they continue to overcome the eye in team to make sure that the team keeps rolling, and it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, playing very well. 5.5 games behind the Yankees for the top spot in the American League. But the race that you really want, it's weird that the Astros are 6 games ahead of the Twins in the win column, but they're 10 games ahead of the Twins in the loss column. It's quite the difference in the amount of games played between the Astros and the Twins. But the Astros playing very well. And I think you look at that game yesterday, too, or even like this entire winning streak, where they've gotten contributions from pretty much everywhere. Yesterday, it was Seth Martinez who came in the middle innings and provided a little bit of long relief, kept the Astros in the ball game, scored a few runs here, scored a few runs there. All of a sudden, the game's tied thanks to Yuli Gurriel. And then you have Yordan Alvarez with 2 outs in the bottom of the ninth to hit that walk-off home run and send everybody home happy on the 4th of July. So that was a lot of fun to see. But then just like the contributions you're getting from everybody, I think is something that you look at during this win streak, whether it's Altuve sparking you at the top, whether it's a few of these starters doing historic things, whether it's the offense, because you know what you're going to get with Yordan Alvarez. He's one of the best hitters, if not the best hitter in all of baseball. But then some also, like Alex Bregman had a very good June. Yuli Gurriel's last 20 games have been way better.
But the thing is that's what, and you know this, Jeremy, for all the years of watching good teams that develop over the course of a season, when you need contributions, I always go back to the 22-game winning streak the Rockets had. They were playing Sacramento, and they toyed around with a Sacramento team, and they thought they were going to win, and all of a sudden they found themselves down. Steve Novak hit a 3 to win that game.
That's
like,
right.
And when you get into a situation like the Astros are in right now, it seems like everybody contributes, and it's all about timing. And like you were, to your point, I was watching and looking at the box score over the weekend, And almost every game, it was like everyone had at least one hit. And the key people were the guys that hadn't been hitting. You see Bregman, like you mentioned, continues to hit. Yuli, I don't care what it looked like, the seeing eye squibber that got through the middle to tie the game. In the box score, it looks like an RBI base hit when they needed it most. But the fact is, he's still getting some hits when they need it. And the awakening or the reawakening of Jeremy Peña. He hasn't been back to himself since the thumb. And all of a sudden, he looks like he is alive and well, and he is ready for a second half push.
See, that was the thing I was watching with Peña, too, because I saw the same thing coming off of the IL. He just hadn't looked the same at the plate. And then all of a sudden, he's in the two-hole because Brantley's out of the lineup because of the injured list. That two-hole, very important. And he hadn't been performing as well as we've seen from the start of the season before he was on the injured list. But then to have the walk-off in a four-hit game, like it was like, okay, well, I'm not getting it going. Like, when is he going to? And then as soon as you even have that thought into your mind, oh, Peña could be reeling at the plate a little bit, he has a four-hit game and hits a walk-off home run, his second walk-off homer of the season, which is awesome to see. And you get walk-offs on back-to-back days because Yordan hits one the very next day. And I know that I like to look at the numbers and stuff like that, but Yordan Alvarez – It's very difficult for me to say that there's another hitter better than Yordan Alvarez in all of Major League Baseball. Judge might have more home runs. You look at the OPS numbers. You look at some of the Baseball Savant numbers, the hard hit percentages, where he's at, percentile, all of that. But then his combination of being able to hit for average, his combination of being able to hit for power, and oh yeah, he has good command of the strike zone. He's willing to take his walks as well. He's one of the most, if not the most, complete hitter in all of
baseball. See,
that's
where I think you got something. I think that you can say, well, from a hard hit percentage, Stanton's going to be up there because he hits a lot of really, really hard baseball.
He swings and misses a lot,
too. Well, I was going to say, but when you look at the overall body of work for him, does he hit for average? No. Does he hit timely home runs and hits? Not often. So he's not that – Judge is a guy that's close because of the fact that he does have pop. He does hit time, you know – we saw it in the series against the Astros, timely hits, you know, pressure situations, can hit for some average. So he's close, but Trout isn't what he used to be, although he's still having a good year. And when you get the whole combination platter of hitting for average, hitting for power, hitting when you need it most in timely situations, Yordan puts it all together. He has to be right there at the top of everybody's list when you say, if there's one guy that I need with two outs and I got to get a hit from, I'm putting Yordan Alvarez at the plate.
It's the other thing, too. Like, if you're just it's like, okay, let's just look around Major League Baseball. You mentioned a few of the guys that are having great seasons. Aaron Judge is having a great season. Paul Goldschmidt, shout out the Woodlands in Texas State. He's having a great season in the NL, might be the NL MVP. Jose Ramirez, I love watching Jose Ramirez hit. He's really good. Trout, you know, the best player of our generation, although he doesn't get it done in the playoffs. All of those are in that conversation. He's been in once.
Once they lost.
Yeah, so not great postseason success or accolades for Mike Trout. So, like, all of those hitters are in the mix, right? And you can start looking at the OPS. You can start looking at the home runs. You can start looking at all of this stuff. But in terms of just like, okay, you pick one dude that you can have for one game, let's say in October. It's hard for me to pick anybody else but Yordan Alvarez. The presence that he has in the box, you're starting to see more pitchers pitch around him too, like not giving him anything to hit. I love the fact that he's not chasing either. Like, take the walk. Let the guys behind you, you know, have a shot as well. I think that's benefiting Kyle Tucker, namely, even though Bregman's now hitting behind Yordan since Brantley went on the injured list. I think Tucker's getting more RBI situations. Like, give me Yordan Alvarez. Like, Jose Ramirez, Yordan Alvarez, to me, are the two that I would have at the very top of my list. I get one player for an entire postseason. Those are the two that I'm taking before anybody else.
I think the hype train is all about kind of powering Aaron Judge, too. He's still up there, and he's having a great year.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at it, if you compare the two, it's very easy to side with Yordan Alvarez. But because he plays in New York, because every time he does anything, including sneeze or fart, it's front page news and it's the number one story on SportsCenter, that they're going to overhype Aaron Judge. But other than that, when you look at Yordan Alvarez, a lot of times he's the best-kept secret in baseball because he still isn't getting nearly his due in terms of the attention and all the exposure for what he does on a nightly basis. And all you got to do is watch him. And you're so right about the fact that they don't need to play him in the field because he's just far too valuable as a hitter for this ball club. And what he just did again and what he continues to do means, look, yeah, he could play the outfield, But Brantley can't get back soon enough just to stabilize left field, so we realize stay in the designated hitter role and just keep doing what you're doing.
See, that's the thing, too, when people talk about Yordan. Like, well, you got to give Brantley the days off. No, they don't. No, I don't. Like, if I'm trying to protect one hitter, which hitter are you protecting? I'm protecting Yordan. Or it's the argument, well, you can use the DH to give guys kind of a partial day off. You can, you know, have Jose Altuve with a partial day off. You can play somebody else at second. Just give Jose Altuve the entire day off. Like, Yordan Alvarez needs to be protected. He needs to be wrapped with, like, bubble wrap. And the only time you let him out of that bubble wrap is whenever he walks to the plate on offense. And I understand that, oh, you're babying him. He could get hurt running the bases. Yeah, he can. But he can also get hurt playing defense. So I can prevent that from happening. I can make sure that he doesn't get hurt on defense by not playing him on defense. Can he get hurt running? Yeah, he could get hurt running. But you also run in the outfield. So I'm pretty strong with that. Like, do not play the dude defensively. His bat is just way too good for the Houston Astros. But also, like, the other two that you've been mentioning, the Yuli picking it up over the last 20 games. The offensive numbers are starting to improve. And, like, I'll give him some grief with that seeing eye single yesterday. He didn't hit that ball with authority. I want to see him hit the ball with authority. He actually has hit the ball with authority over the last 20 games or so. So that's something that I'm encouraged about because I was ready to old yeller Yuli Gurriel. He's starting to look more like Yuli Gurriel from last season. That's not going to prevent me from trading for Trey Mancini, though, because Trey Mancini can play first, he can play corner outfield, and you can DH him, too, whenever Dusty gets the inclination to play.
I like that, and I've also got a couple of relief pitchers because, you know, that's top of my list. Mm-hmm. I also have a couple of relief pitchers that I would look at, but I think that, look, there are very subtle improvements that you could make to this team to make it even better. But I'm starting to lean more and more your direction that this team, as currently constructed, could win a World Series just because of the fact that you have the Yuli awakening. You have Bregman kind of coming back to what he used to be, though he doesn't have to be all that he once was. He just has to be a steady, stable, on both sides of the ball, Alex Bregman, and he's going to be fine. Jake Meyers continues to hit the baseball to show you that he can play center field every day and be the guy that you can lean on there. And we know what Maldi does as a catcher. And if all those other guys are contributing, what he does as an offense is just gravy.
See, I actually want to go the other way on Maldi, where a lot of people want to trade for Wilson Contreras. I want to sign Maldi to a lifetime contract. I'm going to tell you why.
Lifetime.
I want to sign Martin Maldonado to a lifetime contract. I'm going to try to pitch
that
to the city.
Don't do that. Dusty might put him in at 69 to get a couple of innings.
It's weird you went with that number. But, yeah, I'm going to try to make the pitch that Martin Maldonado should sign a lifetime contract with the Astros. Also, Christian Javier, he is an ace. It's the Killer Bee. 713-780-ESPN if you want to get in. 713-780-3776 as I beg for your calls. We're also on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. Martin Maldonado, lifetime contract. And Christian Javier, he is an ace. It's Killer Bee's ESPN975, ESPN925.
You're listening to ESPN975. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Houston Astros are scarlet hot. Just keep winning baseball games. 7 in a row, climbing up the American League standings. Only 5.5 games behind the Yankees. Remember the Astros play the Yankees in a doubleheader straight out of the All-Star game there. I don't really care if they do.
But I'm just asking you a question.
It's an unpopular opinion for me that I don't care if they catch the Yankees or not. Would I rather have the home field advantage than not? Yeah. But I'm not going to overwork my pitching staff and overwork my position players trying to catch them. To me, top two, whatever.
I'm not saying how they get there. Especially like you said, though, if they jump out of the gates and they get two from the Yankees right away.
I think they do.
I think they can, and I think they will as well.
The divisions play a factor here. Because I think the Astros and the Yankees are like 1A, 1B as far as the best teams in the American League. But the Astros have the easiest schedule from here on out in all of the American League. Whereas the Yankees have to battle the Blue Jays, they have to battle the Rays, they have to battle the Red Sox. So I think that the Astros actually will jump the Yankees for the best record in the American League. But I think that they're, you know, the top two teams in the American League for sure. 713-780-ESPN. A couple of people weighing in on Twitch. If they want Mancini, that the talk was give them Javier. Can't be part of that trade if it happens at this point. I would not trade Christian Javier. Christian Javier is untouchable for me. Luis Garcia might even be untouchable for me, but I'd be more willing to part with Garcia than I would Christian Javier. But I really don't want to trade either one. If it means you don't get Mancini, okay, I don't get Trey Mancini.
I think best case scenario, if Urquidy keeps pitching well and they have interest in Urquidy, I'm considering that.
What's that?
I would, if they would consider Urquidy, I would consider getting rid of Urquidy.
Sure. For some reason, I thought you said Odorizzi. I think I was reading the text line. Urquidy, like, Urquidy would be behind those guys. Like, if I'm prioritizing starting pitchers that other teams would want via trade, Javier would be in that mix. Luis Garcia would be in that mix. I think Urquidy would be in the mix, and Hunter Brown would be in the mix. In terms of where I have my value to them, Christian Javier is untouchable. Luis Garcia is almost untouchable. Hunter Brown's almost untouchable. Urquidy's more touchable than the rest of the
three. That's what I'm
saying. But I also think he would have the least value, right?
If you get into brass tacks and say, okay, these guys are off limits, but if we still want to make a deal with you, you might have to sweeten it some other way with someone else in the minors or someone in double A or something like that. And I'm fine with that. But if they settle in and they're okay with the fact that instead of Garcia or Javier, that you could get Urquidy and something else, then maybe you can work with us. But yeah, I'm to the point now where I'm with you. I think Javier and Garcia are off limits.
Yeah, I'm not trading those guys.
Fromber, like, obviously is.
Fromber's off limits. Yep. Yeah, I didn't even put him in that conversation because I feel like you're hanging up the phone anytime somebody brings up Fromber. But I also feel like that's the foundation of a team that's going to be really good for a long time.
Absolutely.
Like, I'm not going to call them the Atlanta Braves with Maddox, Smoltz, Glavin, that. Like, I'm not going to put that on the Houston Astros. But if you have a starting rotation and a core of Fromber, Luis Garcia, Christian Javier, I mean, who knows what Hunter Brown's going to be as a big. There's a lot of unknown with that. I would even throw Urquidy in there. It's like, Urquidy's a really good number three, number four starting pitcher in baseball. You have a core four there in your starting rotation. We haven't even mentioned Verlander, haven't even mentioned Lance McCullers. That team's going to win a lot of games with that rotation alone.
This is sustained success in professional baseball because of the fact that you can easily, and I mean this, easily transition. And a lot of you guys owe a whole lot of thanks to Jeff Luhnow because of the way that he got, for dirt cheap, these young arms that have turned into this rotation for the most part, with the exception of Justin Verlander. When you look at it, you say you've got all the guys you mentioned, and then on the lineup side, you have almost a similar situation. You've got Peña, your long-term shortstop, at cheap dollars, who's completely over-exceeded everything that you could have had with expectations.
Oh my goodness.
You've got Yordan already locked up. You've got Kyle Tucker in the middle of the lineup as well, and you hope to lock him up soon. You got those three guys alone, and you're like, this is what we're starting with? Like, teams are going, how the hell did you make the run that you just made for 5 years? And then with a totally new core, get ready to do it for another five or more. That's really unheard of in baseball. But that's the beauty of how this team was constructed, both through the farm system that Luhnow resurrected and the fact that at the right times they went out and got the right players to sustain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. See, that's it. That to me is the best philosophy you can have in baseball, is you build through the pipeline, but then you're not going to build every position through the pipeline. You're going to have holes. Like, this team needed an ace. They went out and got Justin Verlander. This team needed a left fielder. They went out and got Michael Brantley. So you have to be able to fix the holes that the pipeline doesn't cover. But it's why we're really bullish on the future of the Astros, just not in 2022.
And this is what Golden State did in the NBA, too. To your point, what you do is you utilize your resources in-house first and foremost. You draft really well. You start developing your prospects that aren't on your top 100 list initially, but end up being either guys that are going to help you or guys that are fortifying a trade, getting you someone that you need. And then at the right time, you go out, whether it be in free agency or trades, add the veterans that you need, and take it to another level.
See, it's also like why it annoys me when people get mad at, like, Forrest Whitley. They're like, oh, well, you should have traded Forrest Whitley whenever you had the chance. Well, it's the organizational philosophy to build through the pipeline, right? So, like, you're going to miss on Forrest, probably, but missing on Forrest means Alex Bregman, Carlos Correa, Jose Altuve, George Springer, Jake Myers, Framber Valdez, Christian Javier, Luis Garcia, Jose Urquidy. Like, give me those two misses if it means the other eight players that I'm hitting on. And because, like, we always look at it a case-by-case basis, I think, as fans, right? Mm-hmm. Well, they should have traded Forrest because he turned out to be garbage. They should have traded John Singleton because he turned out to be garbage. But the organizational philosophy doesn't look at just the one player. They look at it like 100 cases, right? We're gonna build through youth, through the pipeline, so we have 100 players, and we hope that 75% of them hit. So that's kind of like how you have to look at it. You can't look at it on a case-by-case basis, even though Forrest Whitley got rocked in Sugarland.
John Singleton turned out to be exactly who they thought he was. A gardener with a green thumb.
He had a green thumb. He definitely did. 7888. One too many eights there. But this is exactly why they need Yordan to learn first base. If Yordan had to play a position, I would DH him for the rest of his career. Like, he is an average left fielder. He's a way better athlete than anybody gives him credit for. We're not saying that he's garbage in left field. We're not saying the dude can't run, because I think we realize he's a far better athlete than people give him credit for. He's a far better left fielder than people give him credit for. But because his bat is so good, I never want him to play the field again. If I had to pick one position, it is first base.
Yes, and add to that, Jeremy, the fact that he has had multiple injuries in the past that have caused you great concern, especially in his lower half. So when you look at that and you say from his knees and his legs perspective already, you've had a couple of scares. That last issue with his knees, they were wondering if he would ever come back and be able to be the kind of hitter that he needed to be. That was enough for you to have flares being sent in the air that said, okay, if he's that good at the plate and that's what you really want him to do, let him do that and nothing else if you can preserve those knees. He's since gotten very, very healthy. He's shown, he can, like you said, he can run the bases again. He has some speed. His arm is good in the outfield. He makes a lot of dumb decisions in the outfield still that they're able to cover for, just hitting the right cutoff guy, things like that.
I think it's more inexperience, right?
And I think, yeah, I was going to say, it comes with reps. But overall, when you look at all those things, we've said all along, I've been adamant. If you're going to have him learn anything at all, if you have to have him in the outfield because you want to use the DH a different way, it's got to be first base in my mind.
Yeah, and if they're going to do it, it has to be next year because you don't want to do it really late in his career. And it's also a time in which Yuli Gurriel's contract's expiring and you're going to need somebody to play first base. So if they're ever going to do it, it's going to have to be this offseason. It's too natural because you don't want to do it once he gets closer to 30, and you don't want to do it once you have a first baseman over there as well. 713-780-ESPN. Can I make a case for, like, a lot of people were wanting to write off Martin Maldonado. They wanted to trade for Contreras. They wanted to upgrade the Houston Astros catcher position. I want to give Martin Maldonado a lifetime contract. And this doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to be a starter for the rest of his life. But the reason that Martin Maldonado is valuable, and people will throw out his batting average terrible, his offensive numbers are not good, even like his advanced defensive numbers aren't as good as they once were. But the reason that Martin Maldonado has so much value to this team, just look at the pitching ERA. Like, why is Christian Javier so good? I mean, sure, that's a lot on Javier. Framber Valdez, Luis Garcia, Jose Urquidy, all of these guys are pitching really well. And the common denominator there is Martin Maldonado. So the last thing that I want to do is disgruntle or trade away or overlook or upgrade at the catcher position for a catcher who is guiding the second best ERA in all of baseball, that has Framber pitching at a very high level, that has Christian Javier looking like an ace, Luis Garcia solid as can be, Jose Urquidy since ditching the cutter has been very good as well. Why would you rock the battery for one of the best pitching staffs in all of baseball?
Look, I don't know about lifetime contract and all of that.
Well, the lifetime contract comes into where next year he's backing up Corey Lee, and then once he's no longer a player, he moves over into a coaching role.
And I could see that, and that's fine, because I think that's what they also were grooming kind of Jason Castro to be if he wants to be somewhere in the organization, kind of like Brad Ausmus Jr. Or the second coming of Brad Ausmus. But when you look at it, the thing that, to me, Corey Lee has a lot to learn, and he seems to be a dry sponge following Maldonado around and sitting in on the meetings and doing the things he needs to do, which is great. But just that in-game is what you lose when he is not able to do a mound visit when he needs to. But when he's communicating even without a mound visit by kind of getting, you know, settling a pitcher down, getting him to kind of refocus, doing some things to buy some time when they're kind of getting their tempo out of whack. Those are the kind of things that it's basically instinctive for him that Corey Lee's going to have a lot to learn to get to that level. So just as a catching type coach and a bench coach that picks up so many things. I mean, I go back to what Correa said a year ago about the extra work he does, you know, going hitter by hitter and tendencies and a game plan and all these different things that he does for the pitching staff. That's so much more than just putting on the gear and going out there and calling a good game and throwing guys out.
Yep.
That's what you hope can rub off on the next generation.
And that's what I mean by the lifetime contract. Like, to me, he's the starter for the rest of this season. If the Astros, like, his contract's up after this year. But if the Astros want him back next season, is like a timeshare for Corey Lee. Because right now, Martin Maldonado is probably going to play 80% of the games, even with Castro around, even with Corey Lee around. Next year, if they want to go to like a 60-40 split, I'm all in favor of that. And then if he wants to retire that following year, make him one of your coaches on the staff. And, you know, we all know the catchers are the best managers, right? And I think that Martin Maldonado has that in his future as well. I want that guy in the organization forever, whatever role that it is. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. All right, let's get into the Christian Javier side of this. Christian Javier is an ace. Skiller Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
6389 texting us in, 713-780-3776. I think it's Larry the GM. He said, dude hits two home runs and you want to sign Maldonado for life? GTFO. You have to teach me what that means. How about your pitching coach is doing
his... Get the fun out of here, Jeremy. That's what it stands
I think that's
for.
What Larry the GM is trying to tell us to do. He said, how about our pitching coach is doing his job? Look, Maldonado is never going to impress you offensively. Like, the two home runs, I don't care about that. The dude's hitting ninth in an order that's getting better and better by the day. And he is, in my opinion, very responsible for the Astros having the second-best ERA in all of baseball. So do I want to get rid of the battery mate of the second-best ERA in baseball to who knows how the pitching's going to respond to that and bring in a slightly better bat, like unless it's Wilson Contreras, that's a significantly better bat. The answer to me is no. And, yeah, I do want Maldonado for life. I don't want him to be the starter for life. I think it'd be great to have a timeshare with Corey Lee next year, show him the ropes, and then transition into a coach. But I'm not messing with Martin Maldonado because he is the catcher for the second-best ERA in all of baseball, and I would say the pitching coaches are doing their jobs. The law firm of Murphy and Miller, they've not missed a beat without Brent Strom.
That's fine. That's right, because I was going to say that Maldi's kind of the new generation of Brent Strom because he can do you give the best of both worlds. He can give you the thinking process behind in-game pitching adjustments by being able to talk to the pitchers, but he can also, you know, the way he calls the game and then he can teach others to call the game. That's an art form in itself, and like I said, that research element is also a big deal. It has nothing to do with his offense because we've been very adamant about the fact that, one, he wasn't going anywhere, primarily because the locker room loves him so damn much, but then you see the value that he brings to the table, and this was all about the rest of the offense underachieving. If the offense in other position areas, mainly third and first base, got their bleep together, this wouldn't have been an issue at all because of the fact that it was a given that whatever he gives you on offense is cake, because he's given you so much more defensively and all the things that we just got done talking about.
Yep.
Now that Yuli and Bregman are bringing it back up and Jake's giving you a little bit more production in center field, you're like, yeah, whatever you know Maldi does, and if he has those occasional outbursts like he did this weekend, that's even better. But just him being whatever he's being offensively means nothing as long as he brings to the table everything on defense.
I mean, baseball is half offense, half preventing offense, right? Like, that's the whole pitching side of things. And Martin Maldonado, what he brings to you from a game planning, from a just calling a game perspective, is second to none. It's a big reason, in our opinion, of why the Astros have the second-best ERA in all of baseball. 6602, I don't know if he's texting or trolling. Machete is the heart of the team. He took over Correa's spot. Look, Maldonado is not more of a leader now because Correa's gone. Martin Maldonado has always been this way. It's why Correa even mentioned it. It's why Alex Cora mentioned it last year in the playoffs. This is Martin Maldonado, and it's who he's been since he's been a Houston Astro.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Look, you can call whoever you want heart and soul. It doesn't matter to me. It's what the guys in that locker room think. And there's, to a man, every guy in that locker room thinks Maldi is such a valuable contributor just by being there every day and then all the things that we talked about. That whether it be by default or by his own doing, or whether he wants it or not, he's absolutely one of the leaders of this team. But that's what makes this whole team such a great combo of just everybody meshing together. It's not like when we talk about analytics, well, this is the best analytical third baseman we can put out there. Or this is the best, you know, we need a catcher that analytics says gives us more offense, even if we sacrifice some of the defense. No, because this was the eye test that we talk about when trying to get a good mesh of the two between analytics and the eye test. This is an eye test call. This guy's way too valuable for the intangibles and the extra work he puts in to be anything but your starting catcher with as good as the rest of this team is.
713-780-ESPN. We want to ask a question to you, the Hive. What was your favorite moment over the weekend? Because you got some candidates here, right? You got the walk-off home run by Yordan. You have the walk-off home run by Jeremy Pena. You have the 20-strikeout performance by the Houston Astros pitching staff. So what was your favorite moment over the weekend? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. As I tell you why I believe Christian Javier, we had this conversation the last time Javier pitched that, like, don't take him out of the rotation. Mm-hmm. Like, you've been Titus Howarding him, moving him from the bullpen, moving him into the starting role, moving him back into the bullpen, moving him all over. He has proven that not only does he belong in this rotation, but he has proven that he is a bona fide ace. And the Astros have Justin Verlander. They have Framber Valdez, who we always talk, is he an ace? Like, if you look Christian Javier, and he's got 69 innings this year, so he doesn't qualify for a lot of the numbers. But would you be surprised if I told you he had a better ERA than Framber Valdez? 2.58 ERA for Christian Javier. If he had enough innings to qualify, it would be the seventh best in all of Major League Baseball. He would be higher than Framber Valdez. He'd be higher than a lot of the best pitchers in the American League. Also, you look at his strikeouts. He averages almost 12.5 strikeouts per 9 innings, which if you convert and look over at the leaders in that, he would be second best in all of the American League. And his numbers, the ERA, the strikeouts per 9, you can make the case that they look better than Gerrit Cole's.
I'll tell you this, and as much as we were, as you know, serious, I'm now adamant about the fact that I don't need to see him in the long relief role ever again. He's just too damn good, and when he's got command of all of his pitches, which normally he has been having command of most all of them in every start, you've heard Bagwell say it, you've heard Blummer say it, you've heard the ex-players say it, you've heard guys that are still playing say it. When he has command of his stuff, he has some of the most, if not the most, unhittable stuff in all of baseball because of the difference and the transition between how fast and accurate his fastball is and the break and the ability to place his breaking pitches and off-speed pitches. It keeps hitters off balance so much that you see the results that you've been seeing recently. And if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Stop tinkering with him. Stop being him, letting him be your guinea pig and play musical chairs. You've understood that he's been able to fill a variety of roles to help you get through situations. Now do him the solid of not touching him ever again from the rotation. Leave him right where he belongs.
I would go a step further than that. Like, I think that the Astros have a bona fide ace in Christian Javier. Like, his invisible, they always call his fastball that invisible, just he doesn't get touched. His career numbers are very good, too. Like, it's easy to look at this year and be like, well, you know, the 2.58 ERA. But the strikeouts per inning, the strikeouts per 9 innings as well, if you want to average it out, and then just his career numbers. Like, he's got a 3.24 career ERA and has really never had a role with the Astros outside of the COVID year. Like, the COVID year, he was pretty much a starter the whole season. But last year, he only made 9 starts. Most of his work came out of the bullpen. This year, he started in the 6-man, then he moved over to the bullpen. Now he's back into the rotation. If the Astros just, like, easy-bake oven him, like, set it and forget it, Christian Javier is going to be one of the best pitchers in the American League. And he's proven it not only this year, but he's proven it over the 3 years that he's had. It's why this rotation has been this rotation, because you pair him with Framber. You pair him with Justin Verlander. And what you've gotten out of Garcia. Garcia's been really good, too. Like, this Astros starting rotation is unbelievable. Like, it really is. Like,
well, and again, it goes back to our conversation about the here and now and the future. The fact that you can lead your rotation of the future with Framber and Javier, mm-hmm. regardless of anything else, there's not a team in baseball that wouldn't say, I'll take that. I'll sign up for that.
It's just, especially what Javier's doing, like the fact that he was a long reliever on this team, that was his role. Yet, I mean, his numbers stack up with pretty much anybody else in baseball, the ERA, the strikeouts. He has been fantastic. What is your favorite moment over the weekend? Do you think Christian Javier is an ace? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. A lot of people are saying Jeremy Pena's home run. Robert in Orange, the best moment was Pena's walk-off home run off of the big mouth Ryan Tapera. Great show, guys. That's the other caveat with the Jeremy Pena home run, was that he hit it off Ryan Tapera, who said some sketchy stuff about the Houston Astros last year during the ALDS. Ever since Tapera has mentioned the sketchy stuff, he has been getting lit up by the Houston Astros, and it was fun to see him have that home run reaction.
I loved the comeback yesterday. I think that it's going to go a long way. When I always talk about those losses that stick in your craw, that's one of those wins that you're going to remember for the rest of the season. But I still, as much as I'll remember that win, there's nothing that satisfied me more that I will remember more from this season, especially, but as it specifically relates to this weekend, than Ryan Tapera feeling his diaper fill at a rapid pace when he watched that ball. He got spun around like a top. You watched him deliver it, and he just spun around as quick as that ball was hit, and then he just absolutely crapped himself while that thing just kept on going like it needed a stewardess on it because it got out so quickly. That was a beautiful, beautiful thing for so many reasons. And, of course, they won the game, but it's just all of that shut the hell up and get the hell out, and Houston's already disowned you, so just claim somewhere else as your hometown and take your medicine.
Yeah, 713-780-ESPN, 50, Eric the driver saying over easy throwing 36 pitches and giving up 2 runs in the first was the best part of the weekend. We'll get into over easy a little bit
I'm holding my tongue on it, but boy, oh boy, I got, ooh.
2785, Maldonado's ninja play at first base was my favorite
was
moment over the weekend.
Too.
I saw a video on Twitter today that he tried to do it against Shohei Ohtani early in the year. And I think Pena said it was like a Caribbean league play, where I guess they do that a lot. I've seen some weird plays in college baseball. I've never seen the catcher creep up the first base line like that.
I will say, first of all, you have to have Altuve's part of this play because he baits him. Because of the fact that he dekes the throw and then, you know, winds up to do it again, kind of all plays into it. It wasn't all just Maldi. It was a combination, which was fantastic. But to your point, the play that got to be fad-like from a different place was, remember the fake pickoff move that I think Miami used in the College World Series one year?
I think it's called the Miami play.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And then everybody kind of acts like the ball's rolling out in the outfield, and everybody's spinning around and acting it out, and then they end up tagging the runner. This could be like that because it was effective.
That was the most physically uncomfortable I've ever been watching a replay.
Really? He tried to catch the ball.
I felt so bad. You can't recover from that.
He tried to catch it.
He will never in his life have a more embarrassing moment than that.
He did. That's what I'm saying. Altuve baited him. So he thought, oh, he's playing with me. I'll pretend, you know, I'll just put my hands up and tell him I'm going to catch it if he throws it. And then he doesn't realize there's another one, fill your diaper moment, where all of a sudden he goes, ugh.
I wanted to hide for the rest of my life for him. It was so bad.
The closest play I've seen to that, U of H used to run a play where they a line drive into center field, like on a one hopper, or even to like right. It didn't matter where it was in outfield. Usually you would see it in center field. And they know that the runner was going to turn and look, because everybody turns and looks, right? So they'll literally come up on a one hop and throw it to first base, like on a laser, trying to get the runner as he's turning past the bag to tag him. And it never worked, but there was like two or three.
They do
it
a lot
bangs
at second as well. Yep. There's always that where it looks like, you know, the throw has to go to the cutoff to the shortstop cutoff on a throw to third base. But instead, you have the second baseman sneak behind the runner and you try and catch him going a little too far. So, I could see how that could be a thing. But man, oh man, what a great play that was. And like we said, I mean, it is a fill your diaper moment.
What was your favorite moment over the weekend? Chris is on hold. We'll get to Chris on the other side. 713-780-ESPN. Christian Javier and Ace. And what was your favorite moment over the weekend? Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Years of research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now! Do it! Do it! Do it now!
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What was your favorite moment over the weekend? It's Christian Javier and Ace. A couple of our questions were deliberating with you. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Chris wants to get in. Chris, you're in the hive of the Killer Bees. What's up?
Yeah, hey, Jeremy. My favorite moment was yesterday, Yordan's walk-off. I was at the game. What a big hit that was. And my worst moment of the weekend was Sunday after the win, finding out that JV wasn't pitching, yesterday. So we had to go see over easy. And I was kind of disappointed about that. I mean, every time JV goes out, I mean, there's always a potential for a no-hitter to take place. And I was hoping to see that. But to you guys' point about Maldonado, you know, Lee making his rookie debut yesterday, he didn't make one mound visit without a coach being there, you know. So I just wonder how many of those five runs Maldonado might have helped keep off the board if he was there. And, you know, with JV now going, Thursday now, you know, pushing him back with the six-man rotation, I just wonder if JV was happy, first of all, see what you guys had to say about that, and two, I don't think anything's wrong with JV. I think they're just trying to save him. But, Odorizzi pitching yesterday, I guess they're shopping him, right? They're hoping someone wants to pick him up.
Chris, you got a lot to cover.
That's buddy. That's our entire show.
hey, Chris, it's me, Joel. We gotta catch up sometime because I miss you.
Yeah.
I know. I've been texting a lot more than calling in. Jeremy was begging for callers today, so I'm like, you know what? I'm going to be brave and call in.
Jeremy's your man, Chris. We appreciate you, buddy.
There's a story behind that about the begging for callers. That was more subtle shade than actual sincerity. But okay. We do appreciate your call, Chris, 713-780-3776. A lot to get to there. We're going to talk about the Justin Verlander later on.
I think you said sent Chris our rundown.
He told us, he gave us what we're talking about at 1. He told us what we're talking about at 1:30. He told us what we're talking about at 2:30. So we are going to get into all of that.
Stay tuned, Chris. That's what we're telling you. Just stay tuned and we'll get to all of it.
I didn't notice the Corey Lee part with the mound visit, though. Now that like he mentioned that, I register in my mind that, yeah, he didn't make a mound visit. So I don't
I think he might have been scared to.
Yeah, first big league start.
Right. And a veteran that's a little bit saucy, that's struggling. I, you know, we saw what Verlander can do to a perfectly good pitching coach when he doesn't want to get talked to. I could see a salty Odorizzi tell him to turn around and get his ass back behind the plate.
I don't think that if Maldonado was behind the plate yesterday, though, that it's affecting the stat line of Jake Odorizzi.
He admitted himself, and he had to. Look, he said he was almost scared to throw his breaking stuff. He had no confidence in it. He said without saying he was scared to throw a breaking pitch, he was scared to throw a breaking pitch. And so as a pitcher's best friend when it's working, it can be your worst nightmare when all you've got is a fastball that's not over 95 miles an hour, by the way, that you're trying to locate and you're not doing a great job of it. So, yeah, I don't know that anything that Corey Lee didn't do, Maldi would have done better, and I think that's just one of those games.
Ocho with a contrarian point about Christian Javier, 713-780-3776. I'm not going to lie. I'm still not sold on Javier because I don't believe his invisible has staying power. Why is it working now? It's not overpowering at 95. Plus, he's throwing it over 80% of the time, so he's basically just using one pitch, and it's not like he has pinpoint accuracy by painting corners. He's just throwing and getting misses for some unknown reason.
Well, it's not an unknown reason until someone tries to figure it out and finally writes, you know, can finally write a scouting report on how to beat him. Mariano Rivera basically lived on 1.5 pitches and became the greatest closer in the history of baseball. I mean, and I'm not saying Javier is going to become the greatest starting pitcher of all time, but until hitters can finally figure out a way, and that's what I got to in terms of the balance and keeping hitters off balance. It's one thing to talk about the rise ball fastball that he has and its effectiveness, but it's complemented and magnified by the fact that his off-speed pitches keep the hitter completely guessing, off balance, and not neutralized, but kind of change speeds effectively enough that you get that swing and miss effect a lot more, and that enhances your fastball. So I don't think, Ocho, that I would worry as much about people figuring out his fastball. You got to figure out his full repertoire, because as he becomes more of a thinking pitcher as he matures, he's only going to get better in terms of when to throw what pitches, as long as he keeps his location.
He lives on his fastball. There's no doubt about that. He throws it over 60% of the
time. But they're not hitting it.
But then his slider, too, swing and miss. Like, he's got two swing and miss pitches with the slider. Now, he doesn't throw the curveball or the changeup very often. He'll show it, but both less than 7% of the time. But King of Twitch, to me, sums it up perfectly. Hitter saying Javier has lift in his fastball tells you all you need to know. Invisible. And this isn't only this year. Like, that's the one thing I want to point to about Christian Javier. Like, first half of the season, 15 games, 11 of those being starts, hasn't thrown 70 innings this year. Maybe you see, like, a stat line that is very different over the course of his career, right? Because, like, Ryan Stanek this year has a sub-1 ERA. He's not a sub-1 ERA guy over the course of his career, but he's pitching really well, I think deserves to be an all-star. Christian Javier has always done this. Like, even back to 2020, like, has he gotten slightly better? Yeah, but he's always been swing and miss. He had 9 strikeouts per 9 2 years ago. He had 11.5 strikeouts last season. He's up to, an echelon to 12.3 this year. But he has been swing and miss his entire career. We're talking about 63 games. We're talking 225 innings. It isn't only 2022.
No.
It's the body of his career.
But here's the other thing. Factor it back in that I continue to bring this up. If you're not playing musical chairs with this guy, if you're not tinkering with his arm and trying to get him to, you know, develop that kind of quick twitch mechanism that gets you ready every single day and 2 out of 3 days, 3 out of 4 days in the bullpen, but then right when you think you've got that mastered, let's get back getting you stretched out because we're going to need you as a spot starter and we might need you in our six-man rotation and we'll figure it out later. If he could have just stayed consistently doing what he's doing right now over the course of his career, he could have been so much better already.
Yeah, give him the comfort of being able to start and you see him take off like he's been taking off here as potentially one of the three aces for the Houston Astros. 9780 saying Javier's biggest issue with being an ace is that he really has not gone past 6-7 innings much at all. And I think this speaks to your point. Like, he hasn't necessarily always been built up to that. Now, there's times whenever he gets, you know, deep into counts where he's throwing too many pitches. I think this is the same conversation of Luis Garcia, too, by the way, where you're not really expecting Garcia or Javier to go, like, into the seventh inning. Their pitch counts do get up there. They do rely on the swing and miss. They do rely on the strikeouts. And a lot of times when you're a strikeout pitcher, you rack up pitches. When you're racking up pitches, it means you have an earlier departure from the game. So if Javier's hangup is that, you know, he's not going into the seventh inning and that's his hangup of not being an ace, I would say the same thing for Luis Garcia. That's something that I'm willing to live with because he's behind Justin Verlander and he's behind Framber Valdez. Like, you had the luxury of a potential ace in your third spot of your rotation, in the fourth spot of your rotation.
And not only that, you have the luxury of depth, too, so that at a certain point, like, as you're getting there and getting back there, and just the same way they did with Justin Verlander, at any time, any guy, if you need a couple extra days because your pitch counts have been up lately, I mean, you have the luxury both in-game if your pitch count gets up, and also over time to give you every so often an extra day or two off because you have the luxury that no other team in baseball has right now of going seven deep with starting pitchers. You can do so much more, and you have so many different variables to come into play that most teams would kill for.
8755 saying this pitching lineup, in my opinion, better than the 17, 18, 19, and 20 season. What's y'all's opinion? This lineup really starting to gel together. Talking about the rotation, I think. 19's very difficult. 18 and 19 are both very difficult because you had Justin Verlander and Gerrit Cole. Like, that 1-2 was phenomenal. And even in 2017, you had a pretty good rotation with Verlander, with McCullers, with Dallas Keuchel. You had Morton there in the mix as well. So it's tough to compare those eras and those pitching staffs with this one. The really only common denominator is Verlander. You would like McCullers to be, but he's not there yet. To me, this is more about the depth than it is the top level. Because, like, you're not matching up a Gerrit Cole and a Verlander with we love Framber, we're calling Javier an ace. Like, they're not Gerrit Cole. Like, it's hard for me to look past that whenever I'm looking at 18 and 19 specifically.
Well, and I think that the other thing, Jeremy, is and we always talk about it, and I always am very adamant about the fact that it's a tale of two seasons, right? You can do whatever you can do in the regular season, but to really prove yourself and solidify yourself as something, no matter what that is, a hitter, a pitcher, you know, a clutch guy, whatever, you do it in the playoffs. And I think that we've seen small doses of the younger pitchers in the playoffs. But in order to get to that ace level, in order to get to that kind of solidified, set in stone, this is a guy that you build your rotation around type guys, like whether it be Framber, who did it last year and had that kind of moment in Fenway Park. If you get Javier to have that kind of moment in the playoffs, now you really know that no matter what the setting, you've got a guy that's ready for it.
It was weird, too, because last year he was one of your most trustworthy relievers, right? Uh-huh. Like, you were going to him in some big spots last year, and he pitched really well in the postseason. You want to see him do that as a starter. 713-780-ESPN. What was your favorite Astros moment over the weekend? 713-780-3776. This is a good one from 0997 we haven't talked about. The best part of the weekend was watching Trout strike out over and over and over and over again. That's another thing, too. Like, we've been raving about the Astros rotation. To make one of the best players, and I think the best player in our generation, look as silly as the Astros did is a testament to this Houston Astros pitching staff.
Especially because he's such a great low ball hitter. And our guys do a great job of pounding the bottom part of the zone. And yet, he was flailing at no matter what they threw. He was guessing all the time, getting caught on his front foot. It was just amazing. And Urquidy was a big reason why, too. Yeah. That shows you how quickly he's figured it out and how good his stuff is. So you look at what they were able to do to just one guy, but just overall, look, you know, Ohtani, too, and he had his moments. But when you just look at what they did to the Yankees and the Mets, and then you look at what they did to some of the best hitters on the Angels, and the fact that the team results are all there as well, you just got to love where this pitching staff is at. That's why it pissed me off so much that Jake Odorizzi, who everybody's a great teammate, you know, the players love him. Well, I don't know that the fans love him, and I don't know that any manager would love him, because I don't feel like they had to rush him back, and the only reason why they did what they did, because he did.
We'll get there.
We're getting there. It's just, I told you, there's only so much I can take.
6389, I love this show. Yes, Javier is an ace. We should sign him long term. My favorite moment was Tapera getting Astrode. 713-780-ESPN. What was your favorite moment over the weekend for the Astros?
You know how the mayor gives out, like, it's so-and-so days, and then you get key to the city or whatever? Mm-hmm. Is there a reverse to that so we can just keep him away from claiming Houston and kick him out of the city?
Are you trying to short a key to the city?
Yeah, I would like to. Can we give, like, the Golden Plunger Award to Ryan Tapera so that he can get flushed? He's out.
I've been under the assumption that we can do whatever we want for the next.
Well, then Ryan Tapera is the first ever recipient of the Get Out of Houston Golden Plunger.
Coming up next, are fireworks shows worth it? Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.